Listen, Duchess. Do you hear the people? They cry out for change. Your weak-minded rule of Mandalore is at an end. The resurrection of our warrior past is about to begin.
I am the Duchess of Mandalore. Your actions will bring our civilization to ruin.
I'm just a simple man trying to make my way in the universe.
My only true loyalty is to Mandalore.
Too bad our people can't stop fighting each other.
You're dealing with the Mandalorians now, child. Not some Imperial officer fresh out of the academy.
I'm not planning on dying.
Little Mandalorian. So proud. And tough, I think. We shall see.
Make sure you put on a good show.
You are listening to Radio Free Mandalore.
Unlimited power!
Okay.
News, reviews, and occasional interviews from a galaxy far, far away. I'm one of your hosts, Patrick.
Do it. Do it. Yes.
Jim.
I'm Kevin.
And this is going to be a long night. Tonight, Woo! We're reviewing the book Lords of the Sith. What'd you guys think?
This book should be called Star Wars Ryloth.
Okay.
Probably the better of the books that we've read.
Yeah?
Well, I've read. I haven't read Catalyst yet, but I thoroughly enjoyed this book.
Good. Good.
Yes.
I'm glad to hear that.
Let the hate flow through you.
If I will let the hate flow through me and give a quick... thought.
Yeah, initial thoughts before we dive in.
Well, in chapter 12. Okay. So what happened? No, I'm kidding. I'm not going to go that far. I say it should be called Star Wars Ryloth because I thought this book was going to be... Now, I didn't think it was going to be just from the perspective of Vader and Palpatine. But I thought it was going to get a lot more than we got. Hmm. Which I'm very happy with what we got, and we'll talk about that more. But, man, there were some points in there in the first... I'd say third, where I'm like, what the hell is going on? Like, get back to Vader, get back to Sidious. I want more. And they're just, you know, obviously the kind of theme there is always to have three, maybe four different kind of side stories going together that all kind of collide. Mm-hmm. Holy shit there, man. There was like three chapters in a row where it's just like you get nuggets of Vader and everything else about everyone else, and I'm like, get back to the dudes on the cover.
But I think
you get to them, they kick fucking ass, and it's amazing.
Yeah, I think they did that on purpose to build him up because he's very apparent in the last half of the book. So I don't know. I think the writer did a good thing in building up all everything the side stuff going on in the book, like leading up to what ultimately happens to the Emperor and Darth Vader. Spoiler alert, they don't die.
Yeah.
Yeah. They make it to the end.
Yes.
Well, I mean, I'll say that I absolutely agree with you. There is definitely payoff. That's the only saving grace for it, or that was the saving grace for me, was that when it picks up and it goes fast and it's good. But it was this. I've noticed that from a lot of the books we've read, the beginning chapters are just slowly chugging along, and then it starts picking up steam like a locomotive. Like, I want something from the get-go. Get me into it and get me moving. And they started that with kind of just the simple dialogue between the two and Vader trying to like decipher what his master's saying to him. They're playing this game of chess, and you get to see the kind of the background behind it. That was awesome. I don't need them igniting lightsabers every scene. Just their interaction was what I was looking for. So, but I mean,
we'll probably talk about this later, but I will agree with you that there were some parts of this book where I'm like, okay, they could have done without that. They could have done without this. Like some things, some storylines were just stretched way too much. I think maybe they were just trying to fill pages with stuff. And they could have done without that. And then I was kind of, boy, I was looking at this book too when I was reading. I was like, well, can they turn this into something? Can this be a movie? Can this be like a, I don't know if they ever did a Darth Vader show or TV show or something like that, or, you know, could this be like an episode and stuff like that? And yeah, I could happen. You know, I think
for some of these the better books, what I would love to see is what DC does with their direct to anime, like direct to home video DVD, Blu-ray, where they take like a couple stories from comics and animate them.
Yeah,
that I think would be cool. I don't know that this would be a good translation for a film, because with the film, like, you know, you like to spend the 2 years trying to figure out what's going on, and if it was based strictly on a book, you'd lose a lot.
Yeah,
but
even if they did something with Netflix, you know, yeah, do like a Netflix series, and so like this could be one of the stories or something like that.
So it's a 44-minute episode or a 50-minute episode.
Could be, yeah.
I don't think any of the books that we've read, or any of the books necessarily that are on the docket to be read and reviewed on this show, need to be made into feature-length films. I don't want that.
Yeah, same.
But to be adjusted or put onto a second medium, sure. A small, you know, I like what you're talking about, Patrick, too, because DC does that great with, like, Justice League, mm-hmm, the whole Justice League series, mm-hmm, that's on. I just watched Justice League Dark, which is fantastic, and it's like you could absolutely see stuff like this, and you can the stuff which we'll talk about later when they're, you know, like I said, when lightsabers get igniting, that would definitely be cool to see the way they talk about it, and it would be a lot cheaper than, you know, all the VFX that they'd have to do, even at a Netflix type show.
And I think it would fit well as animation, because some of these characters, you not only see them in Clone Wars, but then they come back in Rebels, and this would take place in between, so it'd be a nice tie from one to the other. Obviously Cham, yeah, but even like Gobi, he was in both Rebels and Clone Wars, so I feel like that's probably the best medium if they were ever going to convert this to something else. I don't think I'd rather go animation than live action. I mean, I'll never turn down more live action Star Wars, but I think animation would be cool for this.
Yeah, I agree. I think it would be like great if they did, you know, I know people have been talking about it, team up with Netflix, do something similar to what like they do with Marvel and come up with something. But anyways, moving on.
The artwork for the book is a little off too for me.
Is that I don't think there's two of them.
I don't think there was a single one even mentioned.
Nope.
There's multiple Star Destroyers. There's only one talked about. Does that Stormtrooper have a jetpack?
Let me see. Where did I put the book?
What did I just do? I just messed everything up. He does have a jetpack. There were no jetpack stormtroopers in this book.
Mm-mm. Is that even a stormtrooper? Are you talking about the one on the right? Right?
On the left. You can't see it from there. If you look at the wraparound cover art, he's got a, it looks like a jetpack. It could just be a rucksack, but it looks like a jetpack. I will say this, Vader's suit looks cooler.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. I see.
Well, this book was written by Paul Kemp, who actually had written 4 novels in the old canon. So this was his first novel in the new canon. And I think it was one of the first to come out when they rebooted everything. Yeah, this book just came out just under 2 years ago. Takes place 8 years after the Clone Wars begin. So I would say that's probably about, 5 years after Revenge of the Sith? So we're kind of dealing still in that same time frame where we were by the end of Catalyst.
I think one of the cool things about the book is where it takes place in the timeline. Is not many people knew about Darth Vader.
Mm-hmm.
They never seen him. They maybe heard stories, or they just flat out never heard of him. And then, like, when they see him, they just don't know what to think. Even in the Empire, like they were mentioning in the book that, you know, they're like on that Star Destroyer, that, you know, like when he would walk, like they would just stop and stare.
Mm-hmm. And that,
and you know,
seems to be a conscious shift they made from, you know, going back to talking about the old expanded universe. In those books, everyone knew who Darth Vader was. I think it was well known that, I'm not sure, but it may have been well known that the Emperor was a Sith Lord. And in the later books, it was well known that Luke and Leia were Vader's children. And when they rebooted everything, they made this decision to put some mystery around Darth Vader.
Yeah, I think that's cool.
You see in Rebels, like, the first time they see him, which is, like, at that point, Vader's been kicking around for 16, 17 years. They see him, and I think Ezra says, "What was that?" And, like, no one knows.
Mm-hmm.
And as we saw in this book, the Emperor doesn't want anyone to know that he can use the Force, which that's new. So,
spoilers, jeez.
Jump
ahead much?
A little bit.
I kind of reasoned eyebrow at that. I'm like, wait, why would he say that? What?
I don't remember if it was explained in this book or if it was in, I think it might be talked about a little bit in the Tarkin novel. I think it has to do with his whole long con that he pulled in the galaxy starts to fall apart if he blames everything on the Jedi, and then the people find out that he's a Sith and that he's also a Force user.
He could lose support.
Yeah, so he's trying to keep that quiet. Like, he's always set it up like they attacked him and he was this helpless old man. And they were trying to take over the government. And his story would fall apart if he's revealed to be their sworn enemy in disguise. And they were actually just trying to take him in. So I think that's a big part of it. But yeah, this is the first book that I remember where he won't use his powers in front of people and makes Vader defend him and take care of it himself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because he still has to deal with the Galactic Senate and deal with all their shit.
Mm-hmm.
So he keeps everything under wraps. Only the Imperial Guard are allowed to know. Imperial Guard, is that right? Did we look that up?
I think they're Royal Guards in this book.
I think either one is fine.
Those Royal Guards.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go with the Royal Guards.
Yeah, because in the Royal Guard in this book, from what I gather from it, they kind of look no different than Stormtrooper.
Well, they're the red armor.
Oh, did that red armor?
I
just couldn't see them wearing how they looked in the movies, where it's like the red cape and they're just shrouded in it. And I couldn't imagine them running around in this on the planet and that get up.
The old canon had a series of comics that went into like the background of these Royal Guards and how they trained and how they were selected. And it showed what's under the cape, and it is like a red and black armor. And even though that's old canon, the reason I think they're still sticking with that is they just came out with one of those 6-inch black series figures, the really well sculpted ones with all the articulation, and you can remove the cape, and they kept the armor underneath the same. So
I'm seeing some pictures of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
So it looks like, even though, like I said, they've changed canon, that they're sticking with that armor that's underneath. So I could see in this book, that's how I imagine them moving really quickly through the forest, is they're not walking around in these giant capes. They've got the armor underneath. I think the cape that comes with the figure, like, you can turn it or something, so you can either have it how you see in the movies where it's draped over them or kind of like off to the side, almost like Vader.
Well, they mentioned talking in the book, they talk about the Royal Guard and what's underneath those capes that Vader's seen when it's under there, that it's, you know, he's got a vibroblade and he's got a pistol, he's got grenades. Like, they talk about what exactly is under there. So I did imagine them with the capes, but I mean, they're not, like, what you're saying is you couldn't imagine them running around the kind of forest, but they weren't prepared to go into the forest. They were,
I guess what I mean is
walking around and then shit goes down.
When I picture
you know,
how they look in Return of the Jedi, they don't look like they can move quickly. But then when I picture the armor under, then I realize, like, yeah, they could probably move pretty quickly in that. But when you think of how they just look when they're standing in his chamber in Jedi and he sends them away, leave us, you know, they don't really look like they're ready for action. They're just kind of holding a stick and standing by the elevator.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, those guys were also about to go on lunch, so they were a little sluggish. So, it's all about context, you know.
So, what do you guys think the plan to take down the Star Destroyer and how that scene was set up?
I mean, basically, the story revolves around the Free Ryloth movement and Cham Syndulla, who is of Rebels fame.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still leading the movement. It's a what do they call themselves in Rebels?
Rebels are back in Clone Wars.
Well, I don't think Cham wasn't in Clone Wars, was he?
Yes.
Was he?
Yeah.
I remember him in Rebels. I don't remember him in Clone Wars.
Yeah, he at one point didn't want to align with the Jedi, and he was at war with the Separatists on his own planet.
For some reason, I do not remember him at all. I'm going to have to go back and watch that season. But I mean, I liked him in Rebels, so to see him, you know, again, like kind of like a prequel type scenario, it's fun, but it revolves all around the planet of Ryloth and their plan to take on the Empire. They do that in a couple different unique ways. And I was trying to remember how the first started. Do you guys remember how the novel first starts out? Because it's actually one of the probably more badass moments of Vader.
I believe it's Free Ryloth movement is stealing one of the ships, and Vader just sort of crashes into it and pulls a Rogue One on everyone inside, just walks through killing everybody. And Cham, I think, can hear what's going on over like the intercom from his ship or something. So he hears all his people getting wiped out. And
yeah, they're supposed to rendezvous with the team.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're waiting. They're getting kind of more and more worried that something went wrong. And then their team jumps out of hyperspace. And they're like, no, Cham, you're not here. You got to get to safety. And they realize that they're being followed. And it's by Vader, but they don't. I can't remember if they know exactly who Vader is. I think they've heard of him, kind of like to your point, mm-hmm. Kevin. They don't really know who he is, but they've heard of Vader and kind of the, you know, the lapdog of the Emperor or something like that kind of deal. But then when Vader shows up, he's in a dogfight. Basically, turns off his life support, turns off all the automatic systems of his plane, crashes it into his V-wing. Yeah, crashes it into. I think it was a cruiser that they stole, and then basically Jerry rigs his way into the. I mean, that was one of the coolest things to have him go through that and talk about how he's using the Force to hook himself to the side of the destroyer, pulling himself in. Like, that was insane to hear all that.
Mm-hmm.
More respect for Vader than I've ever had probably in that moment.
And this is one of those things that made Rogue One so cool. Is that you over the years I've got to read stuff like this or see him do these incredible feats in the comics, but you never got to see it on screen until recently. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad they found that happy medium in the film between what we've used to seeing on film and all the stuff that's happened in the lore around Star Wars of what he's capable of. That scene at the end of Rogue One reminded me of this.
Okay, like slicing people down. Mm-hmm. 'Cause you know what's funny is in the book where they're on the Star Destroyer and they realize that they've been infiltrated, and it's like, you know, kill all the
Twi'leks.
Kill all the Twi'leks, and he's just running down the hallway, kind of mm-hmm. trying to get to the hyperdrive room, and he's just mowing him down as he's walking by or running by, you know, without a single thought. That's I was thinking about that scene in Rogue One. He's just, you know, he's trying to get somewhere, and like he's just still trying, you know,
nothing gets in his way.
Him down.
Yeah.
See, for me, that scene brought me back to Episode One. Because they talk about specifically in that scene and in other scenes with Vader that he used the Force to augment his speed, and I just remember Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon trying to cut through that hole, and then the big battle droids come out and they flash away,
right?
They're like, flashed up, boom, we're out of here. And they talk about this in this book where, you know, he used his speed to augment or use the Force to augment his speed, or later on, he used the Force to kind of, as he was about to be done, he jumps, and before he can finalize his jump, he gets another boost from the Force and goes flying even farther. And it's like, that's cool. Like, it kind of brings back, you can immediately imagine what that looks like or how he would be moving, because you've already kind of seen a Jedi do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think we saw that anywhere else in any canon that they augmented their speed, unless someone else can tell me where they've done that. Do you remember that outside of Episode One?
No.
The first time you see anybody move faster than they really should be able to is Luke's crazy jump in the carbon freeze chamber when Vader knocks him in, and then he jumps straight up and Vader says, impressive. That's the first time you see it. And then they don't really use it again. So he didn't use any of those kinds of powers in Return of the Jedi. So you're right. You don't see it again until Episode One.
Well, Return of the Jedi, wouldn't you say, like, when they're at the Snorlax pit?
Yeah, he does some acrobatic jumps, but nothing like...
Yeah.
The one in Empire looks more like flying than jumping. It looks like the kinds of stuff you see in the Clone Wars cartoons where they jump from ridiculous heights. And superhero landing. They're going to do superhero landing, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of the level that I was talking about, is, like, not just interesting-looking feats of strength or acrobatics, but talking like legitimately they're blurry because they're moving so fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
which they also talk about in this book, how when Vader is whipping his lightsaber around and he's basically created a wall of light because he's spinning his lightsaber in his hand so fast that it's blocking bolts and blocking blaster fire, but they can't even see him because it's just a wall of red.
Yeah,
and I think
like the way it's moving so fast, it's actually creating like a solid line around him. I think my favorite Vader moment in this book was when they all escaped the Star Destroyer, and his shuttle comes under attack with the Emperor, and he commandeers it. Like, he tells the pilot and co-pilot to get out, and they're going after the escort ship, and he just goes around it, or comes over it, and does a force squeeze through the cockpit on what's her name?
Ishval,
yeah. That I thought that was pretty epic.
I'm pretty sure when they were doing that, they were upside down too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They were. So,
that was and again because she doesn't know, she knows Vader's. So in the book, in the beginning of the book, when they're members of the Free Ryloth movement are trying to steal the destroyer, you've got one set of rebels in the destroyer, another set in a second craft, and they tell the second craft to hide. So they hide in like what, a moon belt, like a star belt or a, what, a star belt, moron. I'm dumb sometimes. What's it called? Like it's the rock belt.
Asteroid belt?
Fly around.
Yes. Asteroid belt, yeah.
Like, rock belt. What are the rock belts called? Yeah, in a it's late. In an asteroid belt, and they can hear everything that's going on, and they hear the fight with Vader and everything. But that's where Ishval doesn't, you know, she's heard of Vader, but she doesn't really know who Vader is. And when Vader goes in there and just kills all these people that she knows, now she has a like undying hatred for him. And it's interesting how those two then interact for the rest of the book, because it's almost like they're fighting against each other, which is really interesting to see Vader versus just a, for lack of a better term, like a kind of a nobody rebel, you know, just a.
Yeah.
But she's got an interesting story in this book too, so it definitely play with some interesting characteristics as to who Vader is at this timeline and what people know and what he can do. I think that's the most interesting thing about the book. Other than the interaction between him and his master.
What I thought was interesting is that they admitted that he's, you know, in their eyes, he's not human because he's doing things that no human should be able to do. But yet they keep going after him. They're convinced that they can take him out. They're convinced that they can kill him.
Yeah.
And I was like, for me, I'm like, why are you guys doing this? Run away. You know, like the plan didn't work. Run away. Like, and strengthen your forces and stuff like that. You know, and I think the one point in this book where I realized that they didn't really think all this through was when Chom was talking to Ishval and pretty much said, you know, what do we do next? Pretty much like, what do we do next? Mm-hmm. We have to run. 30 plus of their members were killed in battle or whatever. You really think about it, like in a small little resistance force like that, that's a lot of people. And almost they have to start over again, you know, if they can survive the day. So at what point, again, going back to my, why don't you just run and regroup and do the next, you know, find out what the next thing is, what the next step is going to be.
Well, at this point, I mean, to that point, they don't know that Palpatine is a Sith. They don't know that Palpatine has any kind of force abilities. They think he's a frail old man and Vader is his big bodyguard, basically. So the only one that really has a huge vendetta against Vader is Ishval.
Yeah.
Cham and Gobi and everyone else, they're going after the Emperor because they view him as an easy target. He's an old man. If we can kill him, and they talk about if we can kill him, they can cut the head off the snake. And even Palpatine mentions that is that that's their objective. You know, if they cut the head off, the body cannot survive. That's what they're attempting to do here is kill me. But I mean, it's Palpatine, so he doesn't have any, he has no fear whatsoever. He knows, you know, they almost hint that he's, well, I think they kind of blatantly say it at some points, but he's like, he's already seen all of this. He knows what's going to happen. He's had a premonition or he's looked into the future and seen what's going to happen. But to Cham, and you're right there with me. I mean, Kevin, when we're reading it, we know what's going to happen. We know he survives, right? So it's like, run away, dumbass, run away. But to them, to their point, they're just like, if we can just kill the Emperor, we win, basically, you know? And the only person that wants to kill Vader is Ishval and maybe Cham a little bit because his friends died too. But you're absolutely right. Every step of the way, it seems like Vader's stronger and scarier, but they still go after him.
Yeah. Because I think...
But it's almost like they kind of say, there is no you know, Free Ryloth movement. There is no revolution after today. So fuck it. Let's just go after him. We have to do what we can to kill him and exhaust every resource because we're all going to die anyways or our lives are over anyways.
Yeah, at this point, it's all or nothing. Instead of these small attacks to, like, what were they? They were trying to steal weapons shipment at the beginning, right? Instead of that kind of stuff, we just have to go all in. And Ishvael's looking for revenge against Vader. So she's really doing it for people that are already dead. And I think Cham's still doing it for people that are left. And he feels like he's always felt like he's got to do this for Ryloth. Going back to the Clone Wars and not really wanting to get involved in the war between the Republic and the Separatists, for him, it was always just about his planet. And when I think he was the one, when they talked to him about joining up, and I think he said to the Jedi, well, how long is it before I'm fighting you? And I can't remember if he said it to Anakin or not, but that would make it even more interesting if it was.
Yeah.
He's always been all about just Ryloth, Ryloth, Ryloth. And even you can see a bit of that in Rebels as well.
I'm trying to read that. I'm looking for that, what you were talking about.
The quote from
Clone Wars. Yeah, because I was like, yeah, I pulled up some info because I was like, what, was he there? I honestly don't remember this arc at all. How did I not remember this arc? I think it might have been Mace.
You know what? I think it was Mace. I think you're absolutely right.
Looks like Anakin was there, but he wasn't.
I think his conversation
at the
was,
talks.
Yeah, I think his conversation was with Mace. I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah, he's talking about two senators that he was talking to, or the senator and then Mace.
Honestly, I had no recollection whatsoever who he said it to. I just thought it would be more interesting if he said it to Anakin.
Another kind of interesting fact, they kind of touch on one of the Moffs in the story as well, Moff Deleon Mors.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You find out through the book, she, I guess she's a human female. She had a wife who was killed in a accidental ship crash, basically. An accidental,
yeah, her transport that she was on malfunctioned and crashed into a building on Coruscant.
Yeah, and after that, she then just kind of gets lost in her regret and her loss, essentially. And then she's a known spice addict, which is kind of like a illicit drug there in the galaxy. As she rises to power, though, she's just become less and less concerned with what's going on under her care. And she puts Colonel Belcour Dre in charge of kind of daily operations. Mm-hmm. And Belcour, not necessarily caring about the movement, but he has for years been working with Cham to kind of undermine the workings of the Moth and the Empire. So it kind of sets up some internal betrayal.
And one of your side stories that you didn't want to read about so you could get back to Vader.
Look, it's again,
I'm
it's not.
I'm with you. I'm just saying.
It sets everything up. It just, I think to Kevin's point, we talked about it earlier, the book is just on, I think it's 299, 298 page-wise. Mm-hmm. It's like 10 and a half hours on Audible. I really love Audible, by the way, you guys. I own some of these books, and I have physically started to read some of these books, and then I just keep going back to Audible because of everything they add in. Not just the voice acting, but you get background music when you're in a cantina. You get the lightsaber, the force lightning in this one. I like Audible so much more, but that's 10 and a half hours of listening to a book. And I think you could have cut that down to an 8-hour book, you know, maybe a 240-page book. And I don't know if you would have necessarily lost anything.
Yeah, it's like, I agree.
It's like when you have a side story that's talking about, there's another series I love reading. And the first book that comes out, and it's very expressive. Oh, they jumped up on the guy's back and he fired once, twice, and the sinewy brain tissue comes out. And then the second book comes out, it's like, and then he was firing, he threw a grenade and they all died. And it's just like, it just cuts out all that bullshit in between where kind of like sometimes it was a little choppy, but sometimes, yeah, you know, I don't need to hear about the one grunt going down when the general's still walking around. But I think they could have cut some stuff out and not lost anything. But the payout is still there at the end. So it's definitely worth a listen or worth a read and kind of getting through that initial content. And it's nothing you can necessarily jump over because it all sets up and it all builds on each other. But
yeah, I've always found that
a little waste.
I struggle through descriptions of like maybe like a lightsaber duel where what you would see on screen might be 3 seconds, but they take 10 pages to describe it.
Mm-hmm.
And he adjusted his grip on the lightsaber, moved his foot, you know, bent his knee. And I'm like, uh-huh. Like, did he cut him in half or not? You know what I mean? And some of the space battles are that same way, where page after page of ships missing each other and make this turn and, you know, like, okay. This is a pacing problem where, like I said, what you would see on screen would just be a couple of seconds. And in order to describe it, and it's not necessarily the bad writing, it's just I get bored. And I think maybe that Audible helps with that because at least they can throw in some sound effects and make me feel like I'm kind of watching it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even in this book, too, because there's a portion. So they're one of the Rebels' plans is to destroy a Star Destroyer. Mm-hmm. So they use Belcour, who's got the inner workings. Now, what I loved about this, too, is you have Belcour, who is an Imperial officer who is working side by side with the Free Ryloth movement or the Rebel movement. And he's feeding them info. But when they kind of come to a spearhead, Cham basically tells Belcour, I've known every single piece of info that you were giving me before you gave it to me. I just want to make sure you would give it to me. Like he's mm-hmm. you've been my puppet the entire time. You've never been above me. I've always been above you.
If anything,
and I know more than
you. Yeah, if anything, he's in his insurance plan.
Exactly. He's been recording everything. He's been taping everything. He's just setting him up as a fall guy. So when he really needs him, he'll do exactly what he says. I love that aspect of it. But they get specific details about it. The senator, I believe, is coming back. Mm-hmm. Unbeknownst to anybody except for, you know, the rebels. And I don't even know if the Moth knows at that time that Vader and Palpatine are coming with him. And the rebels know that. So they know they're going to try to set up a big ass crazy star battle to take out the ship. Was it just a destroyer or was it a super destroyer? Was it a carrier?
Star Destroyer.
Do you remember what it was?
Well, Star we know Destroyer. It's not a super Star Destroyer based on what we saw in Rebels Recon, because they don't exist yet.
Star Destroyer. I think it was the Star Destroyer.
Mm-hmm. Imperial Star Destroyer. Correct. Looked it up.
Boom. Boom. Dropping it. But the way they do it, I thought it was really cool and kind of adding into the audible. Like the Star Destroyer drops out of hyperspace, starting to move, then all of a sudden hits a minefield. And there's hundreds upon hundreds of mines set up. And when you're listening to audible, there's like when the mines are going off, there's kind of a little background rumble. Like It's just enough to like keep your mind, even when you're driving or you're sitting at work, entering numbers into a stupid spreadsheet or something like that. It's enough to keep your mind just enough engaged so that you catch every word, because it doesn't let anything else kind of get in. So it's very useful to me to keep me going through the book.
And I think addition to mines, they use the buzz droids that we saw in episode 3, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, they basically, I don't remember what were they called. They were called, what were the droids that they actually attached them to? It was Vulture?
Vulture droids, yeah. Yeah, because they modified them.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Which I was a little confused, again, I think kind of talking to your point, Patrick, when you're reading versus seeing. I don't fully understand how Star Destroyer shields work, apparently. Because for me, when you see it in the movies, I mean, we just saw Rogue One, where one literally gets taken down. It looks like to me that the shields are just over the outside. But when in this book, when they basically hit the minefield, move into it, it doesn't destroy anything because everything's bouncing off the shields, but it's starting, you know, it's kind of like getting punched. It doesn't hurt your outside of your skin. You're not breaking the skin, but you get a little bruise on the inside. So it's hurting them inside the ship, but not puncturing the ship. So then they try to move backwards. Oh, there's mines there. Mm-hmm. They try to move upwards. Oh, there's like their mines are everywhere. So Vader jumps in his interceptor and is going to go out there and target them all. I didn't understand that fully because they're basically saying they're inside the shield, but they're attacking stuff. And I'm like, how what's the distance between the ship and the shield?
Which would be explained like that. I don't think it's that far off, because you can see like when in Rogue One, when they're attacking the shield on that Star Destroyer, you kind of see the impact.
They hit them with the ion torpedoes?
Yeah, you see the impact and you see the shield kind of light up, and it looks like it's pretty close to the surface.
That's what I'm saying. I thought it was, you know, 10 meters. I don't even know how far a meter is. 10 meters away or something. It's not like you have enough room to maneuver a star fighter, right?
I don't think so. I don't think you can like fly through the shield and fly between the shield and the Star Destroyer.
Yeah, and that's what it meant. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. That's how I'm going to say read, but I listened. That's how I read the book, or how I listened to the material, was that they were inside the shield.
They could have been. They could have gotten through like a hole in the shield, because as the mines explode around the shield, it could have created gaps in the shield.
I could see buzz droids getting in there because they're so small.
They specifically modified some of the vultures or some of the mines to be like it was sucking power out of the shield.
That was creating
holes. But even before that, before those mines started going off, the way the book made it sound was like Vader took a bunch of dudes out there because they were trying to pinpoint those specific ones that were sucking the energy out of the shield. Mm-hmm. But they couldn't use the turrets on the Star Destroyer because they couldn't be that accurate. And if they fired on one, it would ignite 10 or something and have a chain reaction that would knock them around so bad inside that it would kill them. But I don't know. It was a little confusing writing there, but at the same time, it sounded badass. Like I could see that. That would be cool to see digitally done, or even in a cartoon version like we were talking about. That would be cool to see how they kind of go about flying. And Vader just sounds like an absolute badass, using the Force to zigzag through bolts of plasma and around mines. And
I think I was picturing the buzz droids from episode 3, the little ones that got on the ship, but now that you mentioned it was the vulture droids, I wanted to look up and see which ones those I should have been thinking of. But they were the ones from Phantom Menace that were just kind of walking around. So I was picturing the wrong ones. But yeah, they were small enough too that I think that they would be able to get it.
Mm-hmm. The buzz droids?
I was picturing the buzz droids.
Ones that were attacking Anakin's starfighter.
No, yeah, those were buzz droids. I was picturing the wrong ones because it's talking about vulture droids.
Oh, well, the vulture droids were holding a belly full of buzz droids.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
Because the vulture droids were intended somewhere. Yeah, the vulture droids were designed. Some of them were to interact with the V-wings, the fighters. Mm-hmm. And then another set, like a third of them or something, were set to basically just hit the destroyer, kind of burrow as far in as it could, so then it's basically its stomach would pop open with buzz droids, and they were going to go.
That's right.
They were programmed to go straight for the hyperdrive. And then when that failed, when everything was kind of beaten and broken, then the secondary plan was to call for fire and rescue, basically, like a rescue crew from Ryloth.
Uh-huh.
And that's where Ishval and her team is set up as a fake crew, and they infiltrate and go straight for the hyperdrive to blow it up.
That's right.
Which, again, part of the writing, I did not understand how they were moving around with the dead body. Like, they're getting escorted by an Imperial officer down to their new post to what they're going to work on. And then when they finally turn a corner or get into a corridor where they can, she shoots them in the head and they start to head for the hyperdrive. But then when they're trying to escape, they, like, put them on a pallet and she lays on top of the pallet, and then they, like, put the dead body on top of her to, like, cover her.
I think so.
Do you remember this?
I think what they were trying to mimic was they were moving hurt people or dead people around, because there was so much chaos and destruction going on at that time that it just seemed like it was a normal thing to do, that they were just moving casualties around.
Yeah, it just sounded so weird the way that kind of all got set up. Don't mind me here.
I think I got what they were going for, is that they were, that was the whole point, is that there's so much death and destruction going on because the Star Destroyer is being attacked, that they were just running around moving, you know, like, looked like they were just moving like casualties, like they're dead people, and they were just moving them away. So it kind of looked like they were just part of the chaos that was going on at the time.
Still gross.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dead bodies laying on top of you.
Got to do what you got to do. So, so what do you guys think of the scenes when they're on the planet, like in the forested areas?
Once they crash?
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting to visualize, because it's not something we've really ever seen Vader or the Emperor in. We're used to seeing the Emperor just on city planets. We've seen him mostly on Coruscant. You got to see a little bit of Senator Palpatine on Naboo at the end of Phantom Menace. But in film, at least, you never see him anywhere else that I can think of on the Death Star. But still, you know, you think of him in cold metal environments. Running through the forest. And same with Vader. I mean, I can picture Vader running through the forest, but only because I've seen him do that in the Battlefront game. But even when he's down on the Endor moon, he's still inside the landing
installation
pad.
Heather.
Yeah, the landing pad where he's got his ship, you know, where Luke turns himself over. So he's another one that you don't really see in, once he's in the suit, you don't see him in environments typically.
So yeah, I think this is what I was kind of alluding to earlier, where I think they could have done without these scenes. I don't think it added much value. Even this one, and then the one where the rebels were fighting the whatever they were fighting.
Didn't
really mesh well.
What the hell? That one had a weird name.
It began with a G. It's like a camera off the top of my head.
Now I want to know what it was.
I'm looking too.
Gutkurs. The Gutkurs. I absolutely agree, Kevin. The scene or the whole almost 10 pages of Ishval's team fighting the Gutkurs, the large insectoid predators. Gutkurs. They kept saying in the book, kind of funny. But that whole, what was the point of that?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't get it. That, the whole time I was reading that, I'm like, what value does this bring to the book? None whatsoever.
The only thing I can see there is that they're saying how bad those guys are, how bad these wild animals are. And then after that...
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, well, what they did in 10 pages that they could have done in one paragraph was say, these guys, the good coors, whatever you want to call them, they're bad. The lilacs are even worse. They're apex predators. And then they come across a dead one that looks like Vader's killed it. Mm-hmm. So if we're afraid and we're running for 10 pages from this thing that pales in comparison to that other thing, and Vader killed that thing, holy shit, what are we up against?
That makes a lot of sense.
But again, you don't need 10 pages to do that.
Correct. But the part where they're in the nest fighting the those insect apex predators or whatever, it's pretty cool. The lilacs, yeah. That was pretty cool. Because like, you actually get to see, or not see, but read the Emperor, you know, wielding a lightsaber and attacking. And you can imagine him, like, tackling as he's fighting off the lilacs.
So what I thought was really interesting is when the Emperor's shuttle went down, they all kind of jump out. They make a little camp. They're trying to get, you know, someone on the radio. And then I forget whose ship it was exactly, but one of the Rebel ship comes up and kind of spots them. And Vader gets ready to brace himself. And then the Emperor takes off his robe, kind of just full display of power, pulls out his lightsaber, hits them with force lightning, and just kind of full display of all of his might. Mm-hmm. And even Vader is kind of taken aback. Like, it's been a long time since he's seen the Emperor kind of show this kind of will and might. And it even talks about he's hitting this craft with force lightning, and you can tell it's just, you know, charring the bodies inside, and it's just destroying them. Which is just another thing to your point, Kevin. The Rebels come up across a downed ship and they know it's Vader. Let's go after him. They come up against a dead apex predator. Let's go after him. It's like, what are you doing?
Run away.
I think it's one of those things where they realize he's far more powerful than they expected, but they still don't know just how powerful, you know. And like we mentioned, they also don't know the Emperor is powerful. So I think they get that he's more powerful than any one of them, but maybe they're thinking, we're in a group, maybe we could take him. They just have no idea what they're going up against, because they've never seen anything like it.
Yep.
Yeah. And then everything, all the buildup, how they feel about Vader, like, you know, seeing all the death and carnage, all gets thrown to the side when they happen to stumble upon a Twi'lek village. And who do they see sitting amongst the Twi'lek people?
Anakin Skywalker.
No, I thought that was, I can only imagine that in my head. It was freaking, I don't know, just when I was thinking about it, I was like, I can see him just sitting there on the ground, surrounded by the people. They're all singing and dancing. He's just sitting there. I don't know who said it, but in the book, it's like, you've got to be kidding me. Like one of the, I don't know who said it, but it was pretty hilarious.
I will say that scene, there's a scene because after they down the rebel ship, Vader, the Emperor, and then the last two surviving Royal Guard, which one of the Royal Guard, when they're talking about who they are, they give them a break. They're like, you know, take your helmet off. I'm sure you want to breathe some real air. You know, you want to take a break. And they take their heads off, and one guy has tattoos all over his face. And one of the other guys takes off his helmet, and he realizes it's an older clone trooper. Uh-huh. And I thought it was really cool. Like, bringing it all, tying everything together, a little kind of just a bit of fan service, you know, just bringing back the old Clone Wars era stuff. They bring back a lot of Clone Wars era stuff when it comes to the Rebel side, because they're using outdated machines and weapons. But to have an actual clone trooper still in service, and he has risen up the ranks, I thought was pretty cool too. Kind of just a nod to the old days. But as they're running through, kind of trying to escape the Rebels, even though the Rebels aren't after them technically yet, or they don't know they're after them, they then come across those lilacs, which are like the apex predator of the entire planet. Like, they're the worst things on the planet. They're dangerous as hell. And I think it wasn't like a stampede. I can't remember that they called it like a horde or something like that. Like, they come up against an entire colony of these things that chase them underground and through different caverns, and are kind of herding them almost towards something that they don't know exactly what it is. And it turns out to be a nest with a queen, which seemed like almost kind of a little bit of a, as soon as I heard that, my brain went to Alien.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking about like that was what I had pictured fighting them basically, and it sounded similar. It sounded almost like a mix between Alien and like the aliens from Independence Day with the tentacles and stuff.
I was thinking of the in episode 2, you know, when they're fighting on Geonosis.
Oh, yes.
Because the thing that really got like stuck in my mind was like the legs with the spikes on them, you know, like you can stab them.
Hey, Patrick. What did you think about the way that the Emperor and Vader kind of interact with one another?
There's a lot of interesting stuff at play. Throughout the book, Vader starts thinking about his old life. He has flashes of the other Jedi and Padme throughout. I mean, I know it's not this particular point. And I know it was either in this or in Tarkin or in both where the Emperor can sense it and is kind of like scolding him about it, which for me kind of like ties into that idea that we found out after we saw Rogue One that the Emperor forced him to build his castle on Mustafar right near where he failed in his fight against Obi-Wan, to always kind of remember that and have that hate and that anger. So it was
the Emperor made him do that.
It was in one of the guides. So it was cool just to see their dynamic when they're together, because for the most of the films they're not together. I mean, we don't even actually see them together for the first time until Return of the Jedi, and even then it's kind of on and off throughout the movie. So they have very limited time next to each other on film. That's one of the things I enjoyed about this book, is just getting to see how they relate, how they interact when they are actually together. And in a case like this, where they're not just hanging out on a Star Destroyer, they're right in the thick of it, which was also interesting to see when they meet up with the tribe at
what
the
tribe?
Druid's village.
Yeah.
Where they have no technology.
And Emperor let that girl down, and Vader stopped him.
Do they have, I mean, they're just the Twi'leks. I don't know if they had a...
Yeah, I couldn't remember if they were called anything, but...
I don't think they had it. They were just a native Twi'lek village. I don't think they had a name there.
I think they were escaped slaves or something like that.
They speculated that they could be. They never said exactly what they were.
I found it interesting because after all this time of always been told to, you know, not dwell on who he used to be, and then he has to repair their communicator in the village, which is really a callback to young Anakin, little boy Anakin, Jake Lloyd Anakin. So that was interesting too.
Well, that's what I said when Kevin said, who's in the village? It's Anakin. It's at that point, he's kind of going back into his own mind there a little bit. But I mean, I like what the Emperor does kind of throughout the novel, is make him go deep into those memories to kind of almost purge him. You know, and there's kind of the trials of the Sith is kind of one of the sections so deemed, you know, it's all about him getting the dynamic between them and the discussion, you know, the internal monologue where they're talking about the typical dynamic between a master and an apprentice, where it's the master always has to be on point and the apprentice always has to be subservient. And if either of them, you know, the master has to share his secrets and has to push him forward, but always has to be stronger. And at some point, if either of them does not hold up their end of the bargain, the other one's going to kill him.
Yeah.
And that was really interesting, the way they that dynamic between the two and how they interact in this book is really interesting to me, because you know they're not on the same plane. And when Vader, after this is, what did you say, 5 years after episode 3. So he's been Vader for 5 years, let's just say, give or take. And he's still shocked and amazed and confused by Palpatine. That's a scary thought. How powerful is Palpatine?
Yeah.
And even at the end of the book, when Vader's kind of reflecting on everything, he even says to himself, like, I don't think he ever pulled out his full power at all today. You know, did he do it because he knew we didn't need to? Or was it all a test for me to prove myself that if I thought he was weak, I could try to strike at him and take him down? And the whole idea behind it was, it was all a big test for Vader, and the Emperor let all of this happen at his mercy. And it was really interesting to see that dynamic. I have never seen that dynamic anywhere else in any of the current canon.
No, and part of me thought, okay, so is he still surprised by what the Emperor's capable of because they don't spend very much time together? Because you have to imagine that prior to the prequel trilogy, when you had the Rule of Two, you just had two Sith moving around in the shadows. And now the Emperor's off running the galaxy, and he's got Vader out there just doing his bidding. So I kind of wonder how much time they actually spend together. And I get the feeling that it was never really the Emperor's intent for Vader to become stronger and take his place. because once they discovered Luke, they both had the same plan.
Yeah.
You know, Vader wanted to rule the galaxy with his father and son with Luke, and the Emperor ultimately wanted Luke to defeat Vader and take his place. So while the rule of two kind of dictates that, like, the apprentice is supposed to get stronger and stronger and stronger until they are stronger than the master and take their place, I just don't feel that was ever Palpatine's plan for Vader. It was more like, he's the strongest thing we have for now.
Oh, I don't mean, if I said misspoke there, I don't mean that Palpatine wanted to take Vader out there and make him stronger so that he could one day surpass him.
No, I didn't mean that's what you meant. When you were talking about him being surprised by and wondering if he's even seen the Emperor's full power, it just made me think that maybe it's probably because he hasn't, because I don't think he spends that much time with the Emperor.
Well, there's definitely some key lines in there that makes me think that he knows what the Emperor is capable of. Mm-hmm. He knows, I mean, when he took off his robe and steps forward to take on that shuttlecraft, he's like, what is he doing? He's going to unleash his power here? Like, he's going to actually show his power? Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the book, when he's like, he didn't, you know, when I look back over the day, he didn't turn on his full power, you know? Yeah. He doesn't say a percentage, but it's like, he wasn't even operating at 50% power. What was he doing? What was the point of all this? I think he definitely has seen it, but there's aspects to, maybe I should say, traits or abilities that maybe he hasn't seen. Like, he knows that his master plans out almost decades ahead.
Yeah.
But in the day, it seems like his master knows what's about to happen right before it happens. Or, you know, has already seen what's going to happen in the next hour or something. And, you know, he's totally cool with this happening, or we should move now, we should move there, that's where we want to exit the tunnel. And he's just kind of like, how far reaching is your mind? How far reaching is your capability? I know you have it, but how big is it?
Which then, that's really kind of shows why in the 20 years between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope, Vader probably didn't try to overthrow the Emperor and take his place, because he didn't have those skills. Anakin was never one to be able to plan and plan and plan and always be a step ahead.
Yeah.
He was maybe a strategist during the war, but nothing to the capabilities of what Palpatine could do. And that makes a lot of sense later when Luke confronts him and says, you know, there's still good in you. And he's just kind of like, nope, it's too late for me, because he knows anything that he does, the Emperor's probably already planned 20 steps out from there.
Mm-hmm. Well, like there's one scene where I think the Emperor is either, he's not down, but he's on the ropes somehow. Mm-hmm. Not really, but the perception is there. And Vader has a quick thought of, I could kill him right now.
Yeah.
What if I kill him right now?
When he's surrounded by the lilacs or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then the Emperor eventually blasts him all away or whatever. He gets away from it. And Palpatine asks him, like, did you think about killing me? And he's like, I didn't even hesitate. I told him the truth. Yes, I did. And he's like, good. Like, he knows he wants the truth, and the fact that he's able to ask him point blank questions like that, and Vader will tell him the truth. Or even when Vader kind of stretches the truth a little bit or doesn't tell him the full truth, and then comes back later and is like, by the way, I did lie. You know, I didn't tell you the full truth. Yeah, this was happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's like he knows that he's being loyal to him, and the tests are kind of going the right way, if that makes sense. I do love the fact that he calls him friend.
Uh-huh.
And he knows it's a double meaning there. we're kind of friends, but no one's his friend. And the fact that he calls me his friend makes it even more blunt that I'm not his friend.
Old
right?
friend.
Right, friends?
You're not my friend, guy.
Who are you calling guy, pal?
Who are you calling pal, chief?
You're not my chief, buddy.
What do you call him, buddy? Son?
Ooh.
You're calling son dad?
Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, man.
So what else happened in this book? Vader kills a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of things. Like a lot of things.
Like the hopes and dreams of the free Ryloth movement.
We've still got the whole side story going on with Moff Moors and Belcor and Cham getting Belcor to assist with Cham's people blowing up the communication tower so that Vader and the Emperor can't call for help. And at that point, Belcor is pretty much, up to a certain point, has been most concerned with taking out the Moff, but also realizes that he might as well try to take out the Emperor. And Vader is, at that point, take the opportunity. So, and you just got all these little groups where everybody's trying to kill everyone, really. But if I remember correctly, I believe that's why the Emperor wants him to rebuild that communication device because he trusts the Moth to not have sold him out.
Yeah, which the Moth kills Belcor. Mm-hmm. Belcor. Mm-hmm. Eventually Belcor. To kind of keep her secret, like, yeah, that she's been inactive. But the Emperor blatantly tells Vader, like, look, she might be a meth head. Yeah. She's hedonistic. She's nihilistic. She's a spice addict. But she never will be a traitor to the Empire. Mm-hmm. She's as loyal as they come. He knows. He's known this entire time she had nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think, though, like, you know, from the very beginning of the book about the Moth, like, you hear Belcor's disdain for her and, you know, like, talk about her laziness or her, you know, everything that's going wrong with her. Her, you know, her just distance away from everything that's going on in Ryloth, and you know, you kind of have the unpainted picture of her, and like, you know, of course, you know, you rise to power, and then you know, it goes to your head, you think you're above everyone, but then you find out like all the bad things that, you know, happened to her, you know, especially with her wife and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of feel bad, like, okay, I get why she is the way she is.
It's no excuse. Okay.
I get it. I, you know, but. Yeah, you're right. There's no excuse. Ultimately, like, everything that went wrong happened under her watch.
Yeah, which Belcor, it's kind of near the end of the book, he's losing his mind with stress and with the thought of death looming over him. And when the communications array gets back up and Moff Mors is able to kind of reconnect with fighter pilots and figure out, okay, Belcor had a small group of a small contingent that was loyal to him because of what he had done for them over the years. And he tells them that Moff Mors is actually the traitor. We need to go hunt her down, mm-hmm, because he needs to kill her so that she can't tell anyone what he's done. Then she flips it and tells these fighter pilots, like, no, he's the traitor. And the person he's trying to get you to hunt down is the Emperor.
Mm-hmm.
Are you loyal to me? Or are you loyal to him? And they're like, well, loyal to you. Like, hold up. We didn't know that.
Yeah.
And so they switch, and she basically tells him, keep doing everything he says, but tell me exactly what happens right afterwards. So when he is working with Cham to try to do like a bombing run on the Emperor, when they kind of get him in that Twi'lek village near the end, he's calling in the strike team, and they're coming after him. They've relayed that to Mors, and she's sicked the fighters, the V-Wings, onto Belcor. And before he dies, he kind of just unleashes on her, like, me, this is my fault, like, yeah, like, I'm a traitor, but you've been a traitor for longer than that. You've traded on the people, like, you're fat, you're lazy, you're up there on your high tower, this is all your fault. And she just spins right back on him, like, I may have been a traitor in the long run, but you're the only one with blood on your hands. Mm-hmm. You're the only one covered in blood. And he's literally sitting there covered in blood because he killed a pilot to keep a secret.
Right.
And then all of a sudden he just sinks to like resignation. So it's something to be said about the Moth that she's been lazy and out of it. But she even talks about she's going to, you know, from now on, I'm going to be better. And I don't know anything about this Moth beforehand, but it would be interesting to see if she comes back in any future kind of work.
I don't think we've seen her anywhere yet, but that doesn't mean we won't.
I can tell you one thing. Hmm. She won't be grandma.
That's correct.
Bum, bum, bum. Yeah, this is her only appearance.
Only appearance, yeah, thus far.
I kind of wonder what happened to her at the end.
Well, what I've noticed is, you know, like I said, this guy's written 4 or 5 books in the old canon, but this is his first in the new. And they typically, once they come back around for their second book, bring back their old, like the characters they created. So sometimes they'll cross over into other authors' books. But typically, each author sort of builds up their own supporting cast of Star Wars characters to keep reusing. Based on the fact that he's written so many previous books, I think he'll be back, which means we'll see some of these characters again. Who knows? I mean, he might continue. It would make sense if he continues the story of Ryloth. You still have so much time to fill before we see Cham again in Rebels. So he's probably got another 10 to 12 years before Cham shows up again. And all that time he's been fighting on Ryloth. So yeah, I'm sure we'll see them off again. I'm sure we'll see Cham show up. I think he's got 2 more books coming that are untitled.
I just looked up Paul Kemp. They canceled his next 2 books.
Oh, did they really?
Yeah, prior to the Walt Disney acquisition of Lucasfilm, a duology was set to be written by Paul Kemp. However, the duology was canceled.
Interesting. Mm. So never mind then. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't mean he won't write more books in the universe, but seems like they have kind of a stable of authors that they're working with right now, and I haven't heard his name been thrown around for a while, so we'll see. They're not cranking him out at the rate that they seem to have been towards the last few years of the expanded universe, so maybe it's less authors, fewer books, and more tie-ins to the films.
Well, I will say, as far as the authorship goes, if you will, mm-hmm. it's a well-written book.
Mm-hmm.
Good imagery, not too crazy. Slightly weird word choice every now and again. I think Audible has a little bit to do with that, too. The pronunciation on things is a little off. And then they threw a grenade and they were all dead.
End of story. Oh, I think just to wrap it up, like, yeah, it was a good book.
It didn't end with just a grenade. Let's remember that a good majority of the Free Ryloth crew gets captured and killed, and Cham gets away. But sorry, I always forget her name.
Ishval
finally gets, you know, she's captured and she gets her chance to confront Vader and the Emperor and gets decapitated.
Oh, spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoiler
like
alert.
Like a boss. What is amazing about that scene, though, is she tells Vader, I hate you with everything I have, mm-hmm. but I die with no fear, I die with no hate, because I know that everyone that I killed out of love. And right before he cuts off her head, she says, so did I.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Slice. It's like, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. What?
I think everyone I've ever murdered, I murdered for love.
I mean, it's the same thing.
Well, I think murdered would be a much...
Kill I meant more is what his response is. It's not like, cool, mm-hmm. bye. It's like, yeah, so that's what I do too.
Well, maybe in that
and
moment,
he cuts her head off.
In that moment, he's Anakin again. And as Anakin, everyone he ever murdered was for his mother or for Padme?
Yeah, Padme.
No!
And then I think that's the point where he goes and kills all the villagers.
I killed them. I killed them all. They're dead. Every single one of them. And not just the men, but the women and the children too.
Yeah, which that was nice that they didn't elaborate on that.
Yeah,
you don't need. He just goes in there, slice, 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 scream, scream, scream,
poke,
and
poke.
Then he walked out. Yeah, poke, poke, scream, scream, slice, slice, cry, cry, night, night.
With his lightsaber.
So sorry, Kevin. What were you gonna say before I cut you off with the decapitation?
No, I just thought we were wrapping it up. So I'm like, oh, you know, good book. I recommend it. Yeah, I'm kind of now that you say you. You know, Tim, you enjoyed an Audible. Maybe I have to go back and listen to an Audible. I actually read everything, you know, front to back.
Yeah, for me with my commute, it just makes more sense to listen to it. Like I did 2 hours today. Like it just, but it, not even just that, but every book that we've read so far, I've started out reading and then gone to Audible and stayed with Audible. It just kind of catches me. So, mm-hmm. but I mean, we're obviously recording a podcast and I love podcasting. So, it's more I like the audio aspect of it all, but they add so much more to it, a little bit more depth to the story where it's, you know, a little more engaging.
I do
want to see, though, if they're going to do a voice, which they tried to do in Catalyst, I think, because the casting had already been out before they recorded it. They tried to do as much matching as they could, mm-hmm. but people like, you know, in Heir of the Jedi, Drusel, or in someone like this, when you have, I mean, Belkor's dead, but you've got Moff Moors, or even maybe a stormtrooper or something like that. You got a couple key, maybe not too many in this book because almost everyone dies
mm-hmm.
that has a lot of screen time, if you will. But I would like to see if they add these people into canon somewhere along the line. If Moff Moors shows up in Rebels somehow or something like that, if she's involved, which I don't think she is. But, you know, it would be interesting to see if they match the voice to the character or try, you know, if they go a different way. Especially when they do different alien civilizations. That's what I like about it, is this is all canon, so I should expect to see this down the road the same exact way.
You would hope, but from what I've seen so far is they try to match it if the character already exists somewhere, but if the first time you hear the voice is in like an audible, it doesn't always line up. Like there's in the book Bloodline, a younger Snap Wexley appears, which is Greg Grunberg was Snap in The Force Awakens, and I don't think the reader made the connection that this is a person that already existed in canon. They gave him like a think like either a British or an Irish accent. I have to go back and listen to it again. It was kind of distracting because I'm like, I already know who this guy is. I know how he talks, and this isn't lining up. So while the books are canon, I don't think that the narrator's interpretation of the books for Audible's sake are considered canon, which is unfortunate. I really wish everything lined up better. But then you run into issues where you have different people reading different books with returning characters.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. It would be nice. Sometimes you get narrators that can really nail the voices we know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like Han Solo in Heir to the Jedi.
Hey there, guys. This is Han Solo.
Not quite. You're not even there.
Hey, guys. We gotta go.
It's almost like he was trying to do like a bad like Western impression, you know?
We gotta go, you know?
Wow. It's like he's right here with us. Wow.
But the Vader and Palpatine in this one was pretty good. Pretty spot on.
Yeah, the tension was great. Like, you just didn't know what was going to happen next. Like, are they going to start fighting in the middle of the woods or something like that? Or
I just meant the couple characters.
Oh, okay.
But yes, you're absolutely right too. that was the most intriguing aspect of this book for me. Was not no offense to Ryloth. I don't care about your struggles, fake planet of a different solar system. But what I found most intriguing, what I wanted more of, and I kind of touched on this in the start of the podcast, was I wanted more Vader and Palpatine talking. I wanted Vader and Sidious going back and forth as master and apprentice, because that was extremely intriguing, and it's something we haven't seen delved into as much as we could.
And you had mentioned at the beginning, like, this book should have just been called Ryloth, but it was the setting and so many characters and so much happened on Ryloth. But really, this, like you also mentioned, this book was really like the Emperor testing Vader, and it could have happened on any planet with any aliens. So while they took up a good portion of the book, I get why it's called Lords of the Sith. It really was about them, even if they didn't appear in as much of the book as you would like. So if you were going to describe this book to someone who didn't want to, like, had no intention to read it, but just wanted to know, what are the takeaways I need to know for the bigger, expanded Star Wars universe? What would you tell them?
It's Vaderlicious. Vaderlicious, so contagious, make the boys go crazy. But...
oh boy. I don't know. I think, you know, like, it's the best at explaining it is
read it.
Yeah, read it. Like, no, I mean, it's kind of hard to explain because there's so much going on. You can't just sit there and go like, well, it's about these rebels who, you know, somehow attacked a Star Destroyer and blew it up. Literally blew it up.
Right. But I mean, like, aside from the details of the story of what actually happens, like, what's the takeaway from this on the impact on the bigger canon? Because that's what I'm always interested in these books is,
yeah,
do they matter? You know, does each, and I don't mean all the books all together as a whole, do they matter? I mean, each individual book, taking it away from the established canon, does it make a difference? And I'm not talking about if you're someone that only watches the movies, then really you can get by without reading any of them. But I'm just curious what your takeaways were from this as we start to make our way through the whole canon, including Clone Wars and Rebels and the movies and all these books and now the comics. Like, what do you think the important piece from this book was?
I think the biggest takeaway from this is the relationship between Darth Vader and Darth Sidious. Just the way that they interact with each other. Even in my trying times that they were in this book, just the way, you know, their relationship is, and, you know, is there a level of mistrust? Mm-hmm. You know, is it resentment towards each other and stuff like that? Like, I think that was a pretty important takeaway, because especially when you're trying to establish their storyline from here until episode 6.
Yeah, I think I'm on the same, like, kind of same page with you. I think mine would just be that even once he got control of the galaxy, the Emperor was always still scheming and planning and testing Vader, and he was still always two or three steps ahead of everyone. It wasn't like he got control in Revenge of the Sith and just coasted for 20 years until he got thrown down the shaft. But maybe the one thing he didn't anticipate was that Vader would have love for this son that he never knew. And that was his undoing. But he was constantly looking for traitors and someone that could take this all away from him. And this whole plan was to go figure out who the traitor was.
I think biggest takeaways, I can go kind of like a three-prong approach where you have, first off, with Cham, you have the ability to bring, kind of tie Clone Wars to Rebels through a connected source material. Mm-hmm. You have someone who, you know, I don't know if I'm going to say he's a fan favorite, but he's definitely someone that's been, he's part of, a big part of canon, especially because of his offspring and what he does for the Rebel Alliance. But you have that plus the aspect of the relationship that hasn't been fully explained or described in as much detail, but the relationship between Vader and Sidious, that master, that apprentice, and the way in which they interact with one another. And then you also, for me, when you look at this, this is Vader because of all these tests and the fact that he's always being tested by his master and his almost edict as a Sith apprentice to Sidious is to be completely loyal to him. By the time you go from here where he's told to slaughter an entire people and he does it on immediately, mm-hmm. he does it at the beck and call of his master, to then 15 years from now, 14 years from now, I don't know, 15, 18 years from now, he picks his master up and throws him down a hole. Mm-hmm. You know, he turns on someone who for nearly 20 years, he did everything immediately that he was told to do. So there's just a lot of context for me. So is this book good for the canon? Is it necessary? I think so, because of all the context it adds to something that we already know and love.
Well said. You guys, and have
some
any
badass force abilities in this book too.
Yeah, there is.
That's why this would be cool to see as a cartoon or something, or a digital short or something like that. When they're fighting all those dudes, they're fighting all those giant beasts, and they're pulling themselves through space, and they're just all force the force
people through ships and stuff.
Yeah, force chokes, force pushes, the lightning, the force sense, the just so many abilities that are. Would be amazing to see more of on screen in one shape or another.
Did you find it kind of odd that the Emperor and Darth Vader never ate?
Well, I mean, this only took place in like one day.
Yeah, but they're the Royal Guards ate, but they didn't eat.
The force, yeah, when they the when force they broke camp. Them. Yeah, they both started. They were meditating. Plus, you got to figure Vader's probably got snack packs inside his little. Got some juicy fruits in there somewhere.
All right.
Anything else?
No, I think that's it.
All right, Tim, take us out.
Just as we end every podcast, I want to let you know that the views and opinions expressed on this podcast by the host and their guest are theirs alone and do not necessarily represent or reflect those of the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm. With that being said, do you guys think that like Vader has to like change out air filters on that respirator every couple weeks or what?
All right, Tim, take us out.
Just as we end every show,
oh wait,
that was starting out really good.
I know, I'm sorry. You talked about the beat lab a lot.
Actually, I didn't on this one. You talked about it a lot.
See what you've done to me.
It's infectious.
Ugh. Your beat lab is infected.
But we're taking a pill for that.
Cats.
No, that was Brittany coming in the bedroom.
Hi, Brittany.
They say hi. He says hi.
Oh, we can hear that.
You better not hear no hanky panky, you guys.
I don't know.
Hey,
you better turn on the Skype camera if you're gonna do
Jesus.
That.
Jesus, Tim.
Tim says he doesn't want to hear any hanky panky.
Now tell her the rest.
He said if we do, we need to turn on the Skype camera.
So gross.
He just wants to see me naked.
Oh my god. Just like to remind you all that I'm still recording. Then it went silent. I mean, like, it went dead silent. I'm like, okay. I think I lost everybody now. Tim's back in the lab.